set.
They get away first time.
There's going to be a steal.
Cavendish takes the stage. What an athlete. It's goal for Bolt. And again, he's more dangerous than Clementine. Let's go home, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the very first episode of The Scorecard, the podcast where we talk about sports for 15 minutes straight. I'm your host, Arthur, and today we are talking about what is probably the biggest ongoing sports event in history, the Olympic Games. The Olympic Games will group all types of sports, from football to swimming to weightlifting to skateboarding. Any sport you like is in the Games. These Games happen every 4 years, each time in a different city. They bring all countries, ethnics, and differences together in the name of sports. But recently, these games have been creating questions and controversy. Are the games still economically worth organizing? Were they really created by Pierre de Coubertin in 1896? What influence do politics have on these games? Fortunately, today, four people will be passing on the Olympic torch to answer your questions. Vigo, who will be talking about important Olympic dates, Gabriel, who will be digging deeper into the political meaning of the Olympics, Armel, who will be talking about the economic side of things. But first, let's listen to Leonor and what she has to say about the history of the Olympic Games.
Scorecard.
Leonor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Arthur.
The Olympic Games originate from Greece around 776 BC. The Games were part of the Pan-Hellenic events, which were designed to gather all the Greeks in order to unify them. These events played a key role in the emergence of Greek consciousness.
But where did the Olympics start, Leonor?
They started in a Greek city called Olympia. The aim of the Games was to honor the Greek gods, especially Zeus. If two parts of Greece were at war, they would stop their war just to participate in the Olympic Games. Some of the most popular sport events in the Games were running, boxing, pancration, javelin, shot put, and long jump.
Wow, I wish I could participate. Wait, could I? Could you? Who could participate?
All three male Greek citizens could take part in the Olympic Games, regardless of their social status. Some members of the Greek elite even participated. The only problem was that women could not participate. So, surprisingly enough, the Greeks invented another festival called the Erin Games, in honor of the goddess and wife of Zeus, Hera. This festival was made for women only, so men could not take part in them. Each Olympic event was designed to train men to war, so the games could get quite brutal. Talking about brutal, the most violent event was called pancration, which was a combination of boxing and wrestling, only biting and eye gouging were forbidden, and it was common to die during this event. Another quite violent fact is that if a competitor did not follow the rules, he would be publicly whipped and would get a really large fine.
Wow, well, I surely would not cheat. Anything else that's less morbid?
Yes, I do. Athletes would compete completely naked. According to historians, they did this to 1. Show Zeus their physical power, and 2. To draw a distinction between themselves and their enemy, the barbarians, who, they thought, were afraid to show their body.
Thanks a bunch, Leonor. Now I wish all Olympic Games were still like this. I'm joking, of course. Anyway, let's move on to some important Olympic dates. Don't worry, you won't have to learn them by heart.
Scorecard.
Vigo, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Arthur.
Tell us more about dates. Olympic dates, that is.
Now, let me give you some context on the role of politics in sports with these important dates. Berlin, 1936. The Nazi Olympics. Berlin was voted to host the 1936 Olympic Games in 1931. When 1933 came around, however, the Nazi Party rose to power in Germany. London, 1948. Germany and Japan banned. Germany and Japan were not invited to take part in the first Olympic Games after World War II. London, like many European cities, was still recovering from the war, but still showed interest in hosting.
Keeping the torch alive. That's great, Britain. Get it? Whatever.
What happened next?
Summer 1960. The first ever Paralympic Games were held in Rome. Mexico City, 1968. Brutal shooting and civil rights protest. The 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City saw two major political events. 10 days before the opening ceremony of the Games, Mexican students staged a protest in the Plaza of Three Cultures in the Tlatelolco neighborhood of Mexico City. They opposed the use of government funding for the Olympic Games rather than for social programs. The Mexican army surrounded the plaza and opened fire, killing over 200 protesters and injuring more than 1,000. An atrocity which became known as the Tlatelolco Massacre. Additionally, American politics infiltrated the athletics competition. U.S. sprinters Tommy Smith and John Carlos protested their country's treatment of black citizens during the men's 200-meter award ceremony. They took their first and third place podiums barefoot, and during the playing of the U.S. national anthem, raised a single black glove while bowing their heads. The American sprinters in second place, Peter Norman from Australia, wore human rights badges. Smith and Carlos were promptly banned by the International Olympic Committee and the U.S. Olympic Committee. Montreal, 1976. African countries boycott the Olympics. Some 24 countries, mostly in Africa, boycotted the 1976 Olympic Games in Montreal after the International Olympic Committee refused to ban New Zealand from the Games. New Zealand's national rugby team had toured South Africa, a country that had been banned from the Olympics since 1964 because of its apartheid policy.
Man, rugby is such a good game. Anyway, do you have any 21st century dates that are important for the Olympics?
Well, yes, actually I do have some dates from the 21st century. Rio de Janeiro, 2016. The first ever refugee Olympic team. 10 refugee athletes were selected to compete in the first ever refugee Olympic team, also known as ROT, for the Rio de Janeiro Summer Olympics. The International Olympic Committee created this team to bring the refugee crisis to the international forefront. Athletes are originally from Syria, South Sudan, Ethiopia, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo were chosen for the squad. And each athlete trained in a host country, some of which were Kenya, Belgium, Luxembourg, Brazil, or Germany. In all of these events, the political aspect of the Olympics deeply affected both the participants and the host country. Some of these events even affected the whole world. But perhaps none of this would have occurred if it weren't for Pierre de Coubertin. Who is Pierre de Coubertin, you may be thinking? Well, he is the person who brought back the Olympic Games as we know them today, after they took a long nap from the early Christian era when they were abolished to 1896 when Pierre de Coubertin brought the Games back to life. De Coubertin was the second president of the International Olympic Committee from 1896 to 1925 and the honorary president of the International Olympic Committee from 1922 to 1937 when he tragically passed away from a heart attack. He was instrumental in the revival of the Olympics. That's all on Pierre de Coubertin. Thank you, Arthur.
That was Vigo, the date man. Thank you for clarifying dates. And from dates, we slide on to politics with Gabriel.
Scorecard.
How are you doing, Gabriel?
Hi, Arthur. I'm doing well.
So tell us, Gabriel, how can politics influence Olympic Games? And how can Olympic Games influence politics?
Well, Arthur, the Olympics could also affect politics in the sense that athletes may inspire others, which could lead the population into acting like them, and that the Olympics give the opportunity for some political figures to improve their image. The athletes have the power to inspire their fans or even influence their decisions. Some athletes have certain beliefs that could spread throughout their fans.
Any examples of this?
Of course. There's Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who in 1968 protested for civil rights during the Olympics. Another thing that athletes can influence their fans to do is to buy the products that endorse them. In 1984, Michael Jordan released the shoe brand with Nike called Air Jordan. As Michael Jordan continued to get better at basketball, the shoes he wore became priceless. The rapper Nas once said in an interview that if you wore the shoe, you would be like Mike, which back then was every kid's dream. The Olympics are also an opportunity for political figures to improve their image. Some participants of the Olympic Games may be seen interacting with certain political figures. Let's say a fan of that participant sees the interaction, they may be more inclined to support the politician in later campaigns.
Can you give an example? I'm not too sure who to vote for next elections.
An example of this is the picture of the President of France, Emmanuel Macron, posing with the French Olympic medalists. This means that the fans of these athletes may vote for Macron during his next campaign because he had an interaction with their favorite athlete.
Well, now I think I'm gonna buy some Jordans and vote for Macron. Thank you, Gabriel. It was a pleasure listening to you. Now on to the last but not least segment of this show, Armel and his economy stuff.
Scorecard.
How are you doing, Armel?
Hello, thanks for asking, Arthur. I'm doing well.
Tell us, Armel, is it still economically advantageous to host the Olympic Games? I have no idea of what I just said. I should probably listen in economy class. Armel, go ahead.
Every 2 years, billions of dollars are spent for the organization of the Olympics. All of this money, the cost of the Olympics, is used to pay the workforce, the construction of the infrastructures like stadiums, accommodation of the city, and much more. But is the money getting back? Is it a real good investment for a host city? Can they have more revenue from sponsors, ticket sales, or even merchandising to make a profit out of it? Let's see then. From 2000 to 2016, each edition cost over the expected budget. It's become like a rule now, and the host country knows it. For example, the London Summer Olympics in 2012 had a budgeted cost of $5 billion, and the final cost was 3 times bigger, $15 billion. More extreme, Sochi's 2014 Games cost $51 billion, $41 billion over budget.
Wow. Just wow. That's a lot of money. What are the consequences of such spendings?
So yes, because of these crazy spendings, fewer and fewer countries want to bid for organizing the future Olympics. For example, for the Summer Olympics of 2004, 12 cities bid, including Athens, the chosen city, against only 2 for the Winter Olympics of 2022, Beijing and Almaty in Kazakhstan. And for the Summer Olympics of 2024, only Paris really made it to the vote. LA, the only other contender, gave up to position themselves for the 2028 Games that they will host.
What about all the infrastructure that needs to be built?
You are right to ask, Arthur. For each Olympics, host cities need to build new stadiums, new buildings for the Olympic Village, new road, new public transport line, and a lot of other various things. And these really expensive new infrastructures, which have all of their splendor during the Games, don't necessarily have a future after the Games, whether it be at Rio in 2016, at Beijing in 2008, or at Athens in 2004. A lot of buildings fall in ruins, and it's even sometimes at a scale of a district. It can be due to a lack of money or to a lack of utility. Not every city needs an Olympic swimming pool, especially if it's far from where people live.
Okay, so host cities spend a lot to organize the Games, but they must make a lot of money too, right?
In fact, not really. When a city decides to spend billions of dollars, they don't really know if they are going to get the money back. They actually sometimes know that they will lose a lot. And it is a big issue sometimes, like at the Athens Olympics of 2004. As you may know, Greece has been in a debt crisis since 2008. And one of the causes may be the Olympic expenses, as the debt rose about 3% just because of it. 3%! And it was 4 years before the crisis. So yes, all the spendings can have huge consequences.
So are we slowly coming closer to the end of the Olympics?
Of course not, or at least not in my opinion. The power and keenness of organizing the Olympics remains. Good consequences also exist. Everything is not to be thrown away. Social benefits, collective well-being, national pride. And with that, there are still solutions. For example, organizing the Olympics in cities that already have enough infrastructures and don't have the need to build a lot, like Paris or Los Angeles. In Paris, 95% of the installations are already there, 97% for Los Angeles. Not many risks are taken by organizing them in cities like that, and this is maybe one solution. So no, the Olympic era is not finished. Every 2 years you will still be able to watch them. And personally, I hope they last forever.
Thank you for reassuring us, Armel. And thank you for clarifying the cost of these Olympics. Speaking of the Olympics, and therefore the theme of our podcast, this very first episode of The Scorecard is unfortunately coming to an end. Seamless transition here. So what have we learned today? We've learned that Olympic Games were invented by Greeks, who played sports naked. We've learned that the Olympics were boycotted 9 times in the past 90 years. We've learned that politicians and brands use the Olympics to their advantage. And we've learned that the Olympics are rarely profitable for the host city. Not satisfied with this recap? You can listen to this episode of The Scorecard on any streaming platform. Spotify, Deezer, Audible, you name it, for the unbeatable price of $0, euros, pounds, yen, and Dogecoin. Hungry for more? Follow us on Instagram at Scorecard, where we post facts, figures, and fun stuff all about sports. Longing for this episode to end? Well, we've been Leonor, Vigo, Gabriel, Armel, and Arthur. This has been Scorecard.